They begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns.
Welcome back to the Jump Horse Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Yeah, Big 300, doesn't matter what you like. I none of that comes into the equation, okay? So, like I said, do what you got to do, but it doesn't really matter what you like, even if you didn't like your new nickname. Enough of that. 251-343-0106. Chris Elliott coming up in the next hour, as well as Rand Paul, so please stay tuned for that. But joining us now in studio, very pleased to bring on my next guest, friend of the program, State Representative Chris Pringle here with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, I'm great. Let me give a shout-out to my sweet mom. Hey, Mom.
All right. Hi, Mom. Hi, Representative Pringle's mom. Anyway, let's kick it off here. How has the off season been for you this time around?
It's great for me. I've got a lot of construction projects. Yeah, I'm a contractor by trade and a realtor. So
a cool gig with the restoring the renovating historic buildings or older buildings, right?
I do a lot of hunting camps and a lot of restorations of historic buildings, so I have a fun job.
Yeah. Well, I tell everybody I got a building science degree that's a wall decoration, but if I had to ever go back and do it, that would be a cool thing to do, is to do historic buildings. Well, let's first off kick it here, pro tem. You put your name in the mix there. Tell us a little bit about that. And kind of what you see the role of that position in, and because it's been something completely different with Representative Gadsden at that spot. But talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. You know, I first served in the legislature from 1994 to 2002 when the Democrats were in the supermajority. And I worked up there in 1989, 1990. And I remember the days of Jim Campbell and Seth Hammett, who were the pro tems. And they were very influential. They played a key role in not only the proceedings on the floor, in the absence of the speaker, they were in the chair presiding. They helped set the agenda and helped guide the agenda through the process. And it was a much more active role back then, and I'd like to see it go back to that. The pro tem plays a key role in helping the process move forward.
Right, and just be more active. It's a leadership post, and when you talk about that and helping business, what would the day be like, or a typical day be like in that position if you were if you had that post?
Well, you know, Tuesday mornings the leadership meets early, and they go over and they meet with the Senate leadership and the governor, and you talk about what's going to come up this week and how we're going to handle it. And you start trying to build your calendar for the day, the special order calendar, and decide on what day you're going to take up what bills, and you know what bills are going to what committee. It's a very intense process, and it takes a lot of institutional knowledge to work your way through it, because the way that calendar is put together is very important as to how the day is going to flow. So you have to be there very early on Tuesday mornings to get things started.
Well, you... Do you anticipate this? I mean, we're going to have a new speaker, so we'll have perhaps a new majority leader, obviously a new pro tem, a new rules committee chairman, that it's going to be much different than it was this last quadrennium.
Oh, yeah, but there's always changeover. I mean, people don't realize how much changeover we have in the legislative process, and that's good. It brings new people into the process. It brings new concepts and new ways of looking at problems, and that's great. But I think the chamber needs somebody like me that was there when the Democrats were in the supermajority, that has that institutional knowledge, that historic perspective, that can kind of say, wait a minute, you know, we tried this 20 years ago and it didn't work, or let's tap the brakes on this. It's just that historical knowledge and institutional knowledge that I possess.
Well, the Democrats ran the show. I mean, I don't remember. Now, I wasn't as aware of what's going on in the state house as I am now. But I don't remember it being anything like it is now. I don't remember that the Democrats kind of having, you know, free rein like they do and you know, able to spend 20 minutes on every bill, every amendment, and every single one of them, and just kind of run out the clock throughout the day. I, you know, and if we were to change that way of business of being done, and if they complain, what was it like before 2010 when they were in charge? I don't recall. I remember the complaints always being about the upper chamber and the Senate being a place where everything slowed down. So it's like right now in Montgomery, whenever y'all are in session, it feels like the very proactive Senate is, you know, passing a bunch of bills, and the House is where everything goes to slow down. And those are not traditional roles, are they?
No, not at all. I mean, the House used to be the kind of the stronger chamber. And somebody asked me once when I was first there, they said, how long did it take you to learn the rules? I said, it took about an hour and a half to read the book, but every time they run over me, I learned a new rule. and so, you know, they ran over us. They did not treat us well. They did not treat us with respect. If we introduced a good bill into the chamber, they would take it, rejacket it, give it to a Democrat, kill our bill in committee, and pass their version of the bill, then take credit for it. And, you know, they closured us and ran all over us and just totally ignored us, basically.
And the Republicans just don't do that now. I mean, and I get it. You could use a little bit of the way leadership works. I am not naive. I know that you could use the Democrats to do what they're going to do to kind of control what you want to be on the agenda. And then when it comes time to cloture or whatever it may be, then we'll start moving stuff along. But that, you know, it just seems to me, I could see it being a frustration from you guys that you tell your constituents, I want to do X, Y, and Z, and then you never get the opportunity to, just because of the way the chamber's being governed.
Well, one of the things that, as pro tem, I will ensure that, you know, in the absence of the speaker, the pro tem is to preside, rule 80. That gives the pro tem the right to go to ascend to the chair and gavel us into session in the morning. And we're starting 45 minutes, an hour late. And then, you know, we allow certain members to come down every day and just eat time up making these points of personal privileges where they just basically bash us and run their mouth. So if we go in at 1, we might not actually get started till 3 because, you know, we just don't even get started for 45 minutes to an hour.
Now, aside from 2020 because of COVID, but it just seemed 2021 and even this last session just burn through a lot of days for the sake of burning through days. And people don't realize, I mean, unless you have a special session or something, that you have a set amount of time in Montgomery. And there's a reason for that. We don't want, you know, year-round legislature. We don't want it like Congress or anything. But you got to realize there is a premium on these days because of the way we do that, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the 30-day calendar, we have 30 legislative days. And some days we have to pass certain bills, like sunset bills. It's written into the code, and you have to address them on a certain point of the session. But it gets back to that calendar management. The way they were picking the calendar, I mean, I could walk out and look at the special order calendar. Well, they sent it to us the day before, and I'd look at the calendar and say, well, we're not going to get anywhere tomorrow, because of the way they had set the bills on the calendar. I knew that we weren't going to be able to get anywhere. We were going to, A, start late, B, mess around for points of personal privilege, and then we were going to get locked down in the debate and spend hours and hours getting very little accomplished. That's what I'd like to try and help fix.
Well, I mean, it's what we saw these last few years, though. You have that rush at the end to get stuff done, and it gets – I mean, that happens, but it's trying to get a gambling bill through the House with, like, 5 days left or 4 days left. I mean, it's just not feasible, you know. That's not what we want. That's not the way we want. And so, but you know that it was done like that on purpose, so that we're not gonna deal with that, and we can just say we ran out of time and ran the clock out.
Exactly. Well, I mean, we always say in Montgomery the most dangerous time in Montgomery is when the BIR vote goes away.
Right.
After the budgets are passed and that BIR vote goes away, a lot of dangerous bills can show up real quick, and you have to be on your toes to try and block them.
Well, the BIR, meaning it's sort of like the filibuster rule in Congress, but until the budgets are passed, you need that supermajority to get things accomplished, and that's written into the rules, right?
Governor Fab James put that in when he was first elected governor, and it's called the Budget Isolation Resolution. It's a constitutional amendment that says we have to suspend the rules in order to bring any bill up for debate before the budgets are passed. And it was put in as an attempt to, it was sold to the voters as, we're going to force the legislature to pass the budgets first because our primary responsibility, the thing the Constitution says, we are there to appropriate the funds of the state and deal with whatever else we deem necessary. And they were trying to force us to pass the budgets first. We still pass them at the end because of the budget process. You can't really, you don't really want to speed the budget process up. You want to go through all those line items, but it's become a way for to kill a lot of legislation.
Yeah, it's now being used, not in the spirit of what the BIR is. It's being used as a tool by leadership to kind of dictate the ebb and flow of the chamber.
Anybody that's ever had a conversation with me about government and politics, I tell them the same thing. Be careful what you ask for. 25 years after you get it, you will not recognize it. It will not be what you think it is. It might sound reasonable, it might sound prudent, it might sound good. 25 years later, it's not going to be what you think. That's the reason why I repealed 350 laws and have done away with 77 state boards and agencies and commissions. I mean, I do away with government.
Well, let's talk about doing away with government and the state auditor's race. You've heard the rhetoric. You've heard it from Stan Cook and Andrew Cyril. You're, I guess, still your colleague for now in the House. And the whole idea of the role of the state auditor as it fits into our state government, and where should that be laid out? The bureaucracy. What do you make of all this discussion?
There's been talk about doing away with the state auditor's office for 30 years. I can't remember a time that I've not heard people talk about doing away with the office. And I basically have asked this. Who was the state auditor before Jim Ziegler, and who was the auditor before that? Nobody,
nobody knows.
Nobody knows who it is. I mean, Mr. Ziegler has been very good at raising the awareness, as he calls himself the chief agitator, and he's done a good job of promoting himself and that job and stirring the pot. But I told Mr. Sorrell, and I told Mr. Cook, and I told Mr. Glover, campaigning on putting the examiner of public accounts under the state auditor is good campaign rhetoric. It makes people feel good and it sounds logical, but it's not going to happen. I rewrote the entire section of the code dealing with the examiner of public accounts, and we were very careful. We made this. It is they are the employee of the legislature.
Now, you're the chair of the state government committee in the House,
yeah,
right?
But I'm on the examiner of public accounts oversight committee also. It's a joint committee of House and Senate members.
Okay.
And it's balanced, you know, Republican and Democrat, and it's the examiner of public accounts by statute. Our job is to appropriate the funds. We also are responsible for overseeing how they're spent. The examiner is our employee that goes out and examines all the books and reports back to us how the money is being spent. If they're breaking the law, they report it. We are prosecuting numerous people right now. There are numerous cases of prosecution. And every Friday at 9 o'clock, we release the results of the audits, the examiner's audits. We don't grandstand them for self-aggrandizement purposes. It's there. It's public information. But we don't have somebody standing out in front of a press conference trying to, you know,
right,
self-aggrandize themselves.
Well, let me ask you like this then, though. Do you ever worry if the government got into the wrong hands that you could politicize the bureaucracy, that there's not really, it's not accountable to the public like the state auditor would be, per se, and then that at least with the auditor, there's some public buy-in. I mean, that would be their argument of why we need to go back the other direction.
Well, you know, the legislature has the right to impeach the auditor. If the auditor's not doing their job, we can impeach them. We can get rid of them. But to be hired as the examiner, the auditor, there's no requirement other than age requirement to be the state auditor. To be the examiner of public accounts, there's educational and experience that you have to have. This is an extremely complicated job. There's a lot of legal ramifications. Rachel Lori Riddle does a great job. She's a lawyer. She came out of the fiscal office. She understands budgets. She understands accounting. And she has a whole team of professionals that work around her. And they make very hard, tough decisions on prosecuting people. And they correct a lot of ways people are trying to spend money. They'll stop it.
Now, I watched, I guess it was the other night, the auditor, we heard from Sorrell and Cook, and they're talking about there's stolen property, missing property, and there's a report, and it it doesn't seem like it's getting the attention from the DAs and the attorney general, that it seems to be downplayed by these guys, or it's too small potatoes, too small fry, that they got to go after bigger and more important things. And then that is sort of where some of this gets lost in that mix.
Well, I can assure you the attorney general prosecutes based on the recommendations of the Examiner Public Accounts. I mean, they go after people, and people go to jail for it. And you know, but remember, the Examiner of Public Accounts has the authority to put people under oath. If you lie to the examiner, it's a Class C felony. You're placed under oath, and you can be prosecuted for lying. And you know, they audit every county commission. They audit every school board. They audit, you know, the counties. They can audit cities, but they're not required to. They audit every state board agency. The Examiner of Public Accounts audits the auditor's audits. Did you know that? Who do you think checks the auditor's audits? It's the examiner.
Hey, Richard, we got to get a break, and you'll pick it back up on the other side. Guys, we will be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Gather around, chill, and lean down. We're just getting down, chill, and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. Well, because South's going to do it again and again.
To the Jeff Horst Show at Epic Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. So to come, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, and United States Senator Rand Paul will be with us. So please, like I said, stay tuned. 251-343-0106. Try to pick up your text a little bit later in the program. Still with us, State Representative Chris Pringle in studio. Representative, Yasso, the Committee on Redistricting, and we saw how that ordeal went. First, your kind of reaction to what – I mean, I know it was kind of a late process. The census data didn't come in, but the whole Etowah County situation, have you been following that? Is there anything that's under your umbrella that needs to be done there to improve or prevent situations like that from happening in the future?
Not on the redistricting, not on the reapportionment committee. And if you go back and listen to what I said through the whole process, when the Democrats are trying to slow us down and say, we don't need to do this till January, February, I kept saying no. We got the data late, but we have to do this because all the information, once we did what we did, it had to go to the counties. And the registrars in every county had to go through and assign people to the right voting precinct. And it worked in 66 of the 67 counties, but we had a problem in that county because no matter how hard we worked and to turn our work around, obviously there was a problem in Etowah County. They weren't able to get their data correct.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they ran up against a clock, and it was you had the board of registrars, speaking of state auditor, ad commissioner, and the governor, but two of the members just weren't. They didn't know how to use the software, and they were trying to do everything by hand, and that's where everything got mixed up. And that's really where it all goes to, right? I mean, it was just like it was a time issue, you think, or do you think there's more to it?
Well, it was just a time issue, and I warned about this during the session, but we use Maptitude to draw maps. And Maptitude has a program that the counties can buy that literally we just hit a button and transfer the data to them. They run it through. And it'll do it for them automatically. So the registrars don't have to manually do it. And I've talked to Sonny Brasfield, the County Commission Association, about, you know, we need to look into getting the county, more and more counties involved in this, or figure out a way for them to be able to tie in maybe to our information to try and alleviate that problem.
And real quick, we just got a 30 seconds or so here. The reapportionment on the back end of this, everything else seems to be okay.
We have a court hearing in front of the United States Supreme Court October the 2nd, I believe. I know it's in October. They filed a lawsuit against me challenging the congressional districts before I ever introduced a bill. So it's an interesting argument. And the three-judge federal panel basically ruled that even though I drew the districts blind, race blind, I didn't rely enough on race. That I'm gonna have. They want me to rely almost exclusively on race to draw those.
Well, the U.S. Attorney, North District, Jay Towns, says, "Well, it could be a factor, but it's not allowed to be the predominant factor."
Exactly, and we use after we drew the districts, All right. Then we turned on a race and looked at it, but we drew blind. And a federal judge in Louisiana just stated another case saying the conflict between the 14th Amendment.
We got to leave it. We're out of time. I hate to cut you off there. Guys, we'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Prayers is true. Save